Today on the podcast, I have the amazing Mariah Hardy and Kelsey Swanstrom. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Of course.
So you guys are very, very special to my heart because I've known Kelsey 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Was this our 10th year?
This year's our 10 years.
Yeah. So I've known Kelsey a long time because we did school together. And then you came to Bethel Conservatory of the Arts as a student. Mm-hmm. And then I met you as a student. I think that's my first time of meeting you.
We met at church when you held me while I cried.
Yes. So, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had had a traumatic family event and I was in Reading. I was living in LA, but I came out to Reading because my sister was in the hospital and I went to church and I was like, I think my sister might die or be brain dead and I'm so messy. And Ella just was right next to my friends and she just held me and I didn't even know her. And
yes,
and later you were like, I held you at church.
Yes.
Like, you did. That felt so special and like such a source of comfort for me.
That's so neat. Yeah, so I've known you a long time. It's such an honor for me to like watch your journeys. And I think when we pursue something in the arts, it's never just about the craft. It's about our evolution as humans. And I have watched you both step into more authority, more expression of yourself, like your true self, like so connected to yourselves. And I'm excited to have you on because both of you took my class, Wholehearted Artist. And you both really, I had them on because they both really embody what it means to be a wholehearted artist. And you have a great way of processing things. But I'll hand it over to you guys. Like maybe Mariah, like want to share who you are and your background and what made you get into acting?
Well, I grew up in Alaska, between Alaska and Washington. And so I went to theater camp as a kid and starred in our giant church play and like loved to be creative, loved to make home videos. And then I had a big crush on this boy named Leif Carlberg from Anchorage, Alaska, if you're out there. I was in love. And he was really good at basketball. And my dad said, if you want to win a man over, then you should get interested in things that he's interested, which I don't know if it's good advice or not. So, but I...
Steve.
So anyways, I started playing basketball and fell in love with it. Life fell in love with someone else. But I found basketball and became an athlete and really believed that you could not be creative or an athlete. Like you had to pick one. And so throughout school, I kind of just left all of these creative things behind. And I even remember being in my senior year and I was like, I took art class and I loved it. I loved making things. And I asked my teacher if I could take AP art or like advanced placement art. And she was like, I would never let you take AP art. And then I was like, it's just because I'm not creative. But I think it was because I was smoking weed and going to class high and it was really disruptive. But I didn't take all that into context. I was like, it's because I'm not good at art. So life goes on and the Lord started talking to me about being an artist and being a creative. And I remember asking him, like, I have nothing to offer the creative world. Like, what am I supposed to do? And he like flashed this picture over my head or my eyes or something. And I saw myself as a kid creating and acting and I'd make sketch comedy videos in my room alone. And then my dad would find them and show them to his employees and be like, look at my kid, she's making these videos. And so I found this thing inside of me that God was trying to, I feel like, reveal again. And I felt like it was acting. I've always loved to make things up and play a character. And so I felt like the Lord was saying, that's the thing. It took about 7 years for that thing to, maybe even 10 years, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it felt like I kept getting a little bit of the dream. And then I'd be like, okay, go, 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 go. And then the Lord would be like, all right, give it up for a minute. Let me teach you something else. And then I would get the dream again and I'd be like, okay, I would meet somebody, I'd meet producers, I would be introduced to like wild people that I'm like, how am I meeting them? And then the Lord would be like, okay, lay it down. And so it wasn't until I got married, my husband got a job in LA, that a job in church, that we made our way down there, and I started working at a production company. And I was so scared of being rejected and so scared of somebody saying, well, you've got acne, or you're too fat, your thighs are too big, you're not good enough, like all the things that I'm like, if this gets pointed out, it will crush me. And so I was like, I'll just work in production, I'll work behind the scenes, and then maybe magically they'll be like, you are a star, you act. And the whole time I was working at this company, the Lord would be like, do you like this? Is this fun for you? Do you like this? Or do you want to be acting? And I'm like, I want to be acting. And I even had an assistant who was from, she was an actor in, I think, like Denmark or something. And she was like, why aren't you acting? You should be acting. So anyways, all that to say that there was just so much momentum. And then I'm like, this is it. This is the year. And then COVID hit. And I found out about BCA. It was one of, probably the only school open during COVID.
Yeah.
And they made it work. I was a small school.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of things behind screens and with masks and the whole thing. But I felt like COVID disrupted me enough to where I needed a change to find, like, I knew fear is driving my life. I'm so scared. I'm totally afraid of failure. I couldn't play. I couldn't play around. I was taking improv classes, and I was like, I have to get it all right. I'm like, I'm in improv 101. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. That's why I'm here. And yet I was like, I've got to be so funny, and I've got to wow everybody. But what I realized is I was constantly hustling for the special girl, the special kid thing. If I could just prove, like, that's why I wanted to be, have that moment where somebody's like, you are so special.
Yeah.
Wow, we see how special you are, and that's why you're getting promoted. And I was like, oh, if I keep going with the special girl thing, I am going to die, because I live in, like, it's, I'm constantly having to hustle and out special people.
Yeah.
And you can't always out special people. So coming to BCA, I was like, I'm going to win everybody over. And then I didn't. And then I was like, maybe I'm not special. And I learned inside that journey to really comfort the little kid in me that was like, if I'm not special, then I'm not safe.
Yeah.
And I remember one time specifically, it was my junior year, and it was the first time I was singing, or like acting and singing at the same time. And I'm not really a singer, but I thought, I'm going to wow people with my specialness. And I was playing what's her name from Greece?
Oh, I was there. Riz. You were playing Riz. You were fantastic.
Well, actually, yeah, I prayed that God, you have always answered my prayers of like, if I'm like, God, if you love what I do, tell somebody to tell me, and then I'll like say a word that I'm like jaw dropping or like something. And then like Ella would always come up to me and she'd be like, you were jaw dropping. I'm like, what a weird thing to say to me. But inside of that, I did it, and I forgot. Well, before, you know, because you're a singer and a vocal coach, if you have fear, you cannot sing.
Oh, yes.
You lose your breath. You lose connection with yourself. And when you're like that feeling of nerves where you're like, I'm running out of breath, I'm running out of breath. Well, I kept having that over and over and over again. And finally, I was like, this is not working. I can't sing this like this. And so I took a moment. I'm like, what is the thing that I'm trying to prove here? And I was like, oh, all these people are coming. And if they would just say that I was special, and they would be like, wow, I'd had this fantasy. Right, we had no idea you could sing. And like, I just wanted that. I'm like, I'm not, like, I'm okay singer. I can sing in the shower. It sounds kind of nice. Sometimes I hit a note and I'm like, well, that's really pretty. But I'm like, I'm not a singer. And so I was wanting something that isn't a reality. Like, I'm wanting this thing to come out of me that's not real. And so I imagined this little girl inside that was like, please just think I'm special. Please just think that I'm good. And so I went back and I was like, oh, I can see that little girl. And I started talking to her. I'm like, if nobody likes what you do, I'm going to like what you do. If nobody else thinks you're special, I think you're special. I'm so proud that you chose to do something so scary. If you fall on your face, I'm just going to be proud. Like, you're in a learning environment. You can just stretch and play and do it. And so I felt so regulated, so connected to myself through that whole performance. I don't really know if it was good or not. I know that I messed up. I sang the verse line too soon, so I had to sing it twice. And then I was like, whatever. Usually I would have been like, I can't believe you're such an idiot. Why? Oh, you know it. And I went off and I felt so good. And somebody was like, Mariah, I didn't even, like, you couldn't even tell that you messed up. And I was like, I even kind of forgot that I messed up. I just felt so connected. So
breakthrough.
I think that has been the journey for me as discovering what it's like to be an artist, what it's like to be a wholehearted artist, and what's got me to this place. I know you wanted to mention me to mention that I had, because it took me 7 or 10 years to get to this place where I decided to pursue acting. I was 28 when I started conservatory, which means I was 31 when I finished. And I think that there definitely was there's a stigma and a fear around starting something late, which I think is bullshit.
Yeah.
Because how are you supposed to know?
How are you supposed to know?
If I picked what I was going to do when I was 18, I would be a missionary nurse, which if you know me,
no,
I think I would be also dead.
Yeah.
I would have to be so disassociated to do that job. Yeah. And God bless anybody who's a missionary nurse out there and feels totally alive in it. It's just not for me. And so I think like acting is one of those things where like all I need is connection to myself and my body. And I have that for the rest of my life. Like I can be doing this and improving and going somewhere for the rest of my life. And so I feel so grateful that I started late. I shouldn't even say late, but I just started at 28. I feel grateful
for that. Because you have like a greater sense of who you are going into it. Because I studied acting when I was 18. So I was like, they'd give me notes and take more risks. And I'm like, do you mean more sexual? I did not know what risky actually meant.
Yeah.
You know, whereas you do when you're a bit older. Mm. But what about you, Kelsey? How did you get into acting? I know you've grown up kind of singing and dancing, but share.
How did I get here?
How did you get here?
So similarly, I grew up in Washington, like 45 minutes from Mariah, which is crazy, but we didn't meet each other until Reading. But similar in the sense that I don't know your background as much, but my background was very much like the masculine traits were really celebrated. So like sports, or in my background, rural farming, agriculture, 4-H. Like I was a horse girl. There was a lot of that was really celebrated. My family also really celebrated those things. And so then when I was young and started showing affinity for music and singing and the arts, my mom was so excited, but there wasn't a ton of resources. And there also, it was like, yes, we want you to be able to do this as long as all these other things are taken care of, all of these other useful, practical, responsible, resourceful skills. So I grew up very academic, super smart. Like that was kind of my way. I wasn't super sporty, but I was smart. And so that was my way of being like, okay, I am succeeding within my context. And then I'm going to take dance classes, and then I'm going to take voice lessons, and then I'm going to take a 1 week theater camp. But it's always this periphery, like it's this little thing that makes me excited, but it's not ever going to be the main thing. And so around my early 20s, that's when I met Ella. Mm-hmm. We were doing a ministry school together, and I dabbled in creative stuff. And then I was like, okay, I did my time. I've dabbled. I'm now going to be a ministry wife. And had no prospects of anyone to be a wife to, but that was my plan. And
a ministry wife. I've never heard that before, but I know exactly what you mean.
It was very clear in my head.
Yeah.
And then I, started kind of the ministry lifestyle. I was traveling and leading worship, and like I was like doing it. I was like, I've arrived. I'm succeeding. And then I got super sick. I had like an emotional breakdown. My family, like life started getting really explosive and messy. And I was like, if this is it, this sucks.
Yeah.
And in that was where, through like quiet guiding of the Holy Spirit voice of, I think what you really want is performing and acting specifically, was this dream that I'd never even like let myself touch. And I remember I got invited to join the dance program, like one of BCA's first years.
Yes.
And I was like, no, I'm done with performing. I've given it up. But I'll meet with Ella. I love Ella.
That's right.
And so I was, it was very much a pity. I'll just meet with her, see what happens. Worst case scenario, we have a catch up. And in that meeting, we're talking about the different programs. And we get to this point where I remember so we were sitting in the lobby.
Yeah.
Because there were like no offices.
There was no offices at that point. Yeah.
But I remember saying, and it was one of those moments where you say something super truthful that you didn't like cognitively know, but it's true. And I was like, I'm mad at God because he made me creative, which means I can't be responsible. And this like tension and dichotomy of this creative, expressive performer, writer, whatever part of me is at odds with the things that make me safe, successful, stable, loved, you know, all the things that super matter. And so in that, the conversation, we kind of like, you're like, well, what if you did the acting certificate? It's 1 year, it's low stakes. I was like, okay, maybe. And so ended up doing that. In that, huge breakthroughs. It's such a layered story because for me, BCA was about 30% like technique and acting skill and 70% emotional relational skills. And yes. So like I was learning stuff that I had never learned about communication, conflict, showing up vulnerably with people, being able to communicate my needs, being able to like regulate myself. I didn't have tools to regulate myself. Like, so much of this, like the human Kelsey got cared for in that process, which I think this is jumping ahead, I think. But when it comes to the phrase wholehearted artist, there is this element of, well, I've been an artist my whole life from the time I was little tiny bean creating music and, you know, putting on shows for my family. But I haven't been wholehearted my whole life. Mm. And that through pain, through dysfunction, through all these things that life has happened, you know, I pulled back my heart. I, you know, locked things down, started repressing, you know.
Yeah.
And so for me, the artist part has been consistent. The wholehearted part is what has come into play in the last 5 years since going to counseling, being challenged in acting school, being challenged in just like work and life. So I think my story very much, I see the thread of like, there's these two elements of there's the creator part, but then how do you steward the creator part? Because if you're not stewarding the creator part, it's going to fizzle, which was my experience of giving up on performing. Like, I don't have the structures. I'm terrified by auditions. So that means I probably shouldn't audition. You know, like I don't have the internal structures to regulate and comfort and show compassion to myself like Mariah did in her performance. Like I didn't have that. So it made auditioning feel unavailable versus, oh, they need to actually grow in tandem of I need the skills of there are practical skills for auditioning. And there's this wholehearted piece of I need the skills to be able to be with myself in that challenging, vulnerable space. And then those skills apply to so many other things. So the Venn diagram my head is very like it, everything offshoots from the human and the wholehearted journey.
Think. Oh, so beautifully said. What about, I mean, Mariah, I love how you were talking about tending to your inner child and talking about the need to be special. And I just had David Noronha on my podcast and he was talking about his need for significance and like we all have different needs inside ourselves. So how would you describe your journey in being a wholehearted artist?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like being a wholehearted artist has a lot to do with not abandoning parts of yourself.
Wow.
I think everyone is an artist in some way. And we all, I mean, even if my mom would say, well, my mom would say she's an artist. My mom's actually a really lovely painter, but that's been something like my mom's always been very creative, but her way of art has been taking care of her home and having like a beautiful space.
Yeah.
And I think that's really life-giving and also in stress can be like everything needs to be clean and have order and have place. And you're having to orphan a part of yourself in order to protect another part. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So mm-hmm. I think for me, I could also use that same example with myself. I feel that as well. Yeah. I love a beautiful space. And then also I can get very mm-hmm.
yeah.
Protective. Mm-hmm. so I think for me, it's been being a well-rounded person mm-hmm. and engaging in things outside of art
yes.
to make art have more significance and meaning and be able to land. Because if mm-hmm. all of my eggs are in the art basket, then I automatically put so much pressure on myself. Right. Who was it? I gave you the book, Big
Elizabeth
Magic.
Elizabeth Gilbert, yes. Big Magic.
I read it and I loved it. And then I gave it to Kelsey and Kelsey told me all of the points in the book that were so beautiful. But I was like, oh yeah, that was really helpful to hear. I don't know that I let it land, but hearing you regurgitate that is really nice. And mm-hmm. one of the things she talks about is not putting the pressure on your art to make money
yes.
and be the thing that makes money. Mm-hmm. Now, I think I firmly believe that art can make money, but I think the pressure aspect is important to let go of. Mm-hmm. But I think inside of being a creative, being an artist, I can't orphan the parts of me that need rest and need space and need to give up the dream and the pressure, because I think I'll always have that feeling of being special, like the need to be special. I think yeah. that that's something I will have to wrestle with. I think there's a part of me inside of being an actor that's like, it feels so good to be famous. It feels, mm-hmm. and everyone's like, you can't do it for the fame. Bullshit. Everybody's doing it for the fame. Everybody wants to be famous
for
who's an actor.
The safety of it.
Because you get to be significant. Mm-hmm. You get to matter. Mm-hmm. You get to have people know you. You get to have people look to you and think that, like, oh, wow, I want to know. I want, like, to feel attracted.
Adored.
Mm-hmm. Oh, everybody wants that. And that is the allure yeah. of fame. That's why people are like, it's not worth it to be famous, because when you get there, you're like,
none of these things exist.
I don't actually
really.
Get it. Yeah.
yeah.
But mm-hmm. I always am like, oh, I'll have to always wrestle with that desire and with that feeling and balance it with reality and figure out what is the thing I'm actually wanting? Mm. What is the little kid inside of me actually needing when I'm feeling pressure inside of the show that I'm putting on? I do the fantasy thing. I can tell I'm in pain when I have the fantasy of,
oh, this is good.
I have it even now. Like, I'm like, when people listen to this podcast, yeah. they are gonna think this girl, first of all, they're gonna like her outfit. And they're going to think she's so cool. Like, I want that. I yeah. want those things, for people to think those things about me. And just to have, like, I think being honest about it, because everybody thinks that.
Right.
Everybody, we're all wanting that. We're all wanting to feel
to
safe and to
right.
matter.
Yeah.
And if I can peel it back and get to, if first I have to be honest.
Yeah.
Just lay it on the carpet. This is my human experience. Okay. And I think that's something that I have enjoyed about myself. I've always felt like I'm just going to say it. Mm-hmm. And I hope that if I say it, someone else will feel the same.
We can
and
piece
I found
together
that,
the pieces.
Yeah, to always be true. I've never felt alone in authenticity.
And, yeah, and I actually, because I think dealing when you're in Christian circles, there's such it's called a cognitive dissonance, like a head and heart disconnection of like, this is the right way to behave. So I would never want to be famous.
Right.
Like, and so mm-hmm. I actually measure someone's maturity, definitely judge. And is there a willingness to be like, yeah, I want that.
Yeah. Right.
Like that actually is a sign of maturity.
And
yeah.
I think another layer too, because yeah. I big disassociator, dissonance person. Yeah. I think there's an element of, if I say the right thing, then I'll get what I want, or good things won't be taken away. I'll be safe.
Yes.
So maturity is, I'm already safe and yeah. I'm allowed to have things that maybe would be judged, but I'm going to extend compassion anyway.
Yeah.
And like maturity looking like actually not so much an out thing, but an in thing of like, I'm mature enough to know that I want to be famous because I want to be seen. And I can go after and give myself what I need to be seen, which yes. is I can talk to a friend, or I can go and, you know, yeah. like I can actually address the root issue.
Yeah. yeah. Whereas other people are just walking around in denial, like most of the time. I love that you brought up fantasy. Do you want to speak into that a little bit more? Like, I don't know. Like, I think that sometimes we just pretend that, no, I don't have a fantasy life.
Yeah.
There's so much shame around it or whatever. Yeah. But actually, like, it's especially in pain. I notice like when we have a lot of pain, yeah, like I've worked with different clients who are like, oh, I live most of my life in fantasy. And they're wild creatives, like they're doing amazing mm-hmm. things, but they are not grounded at all. But then if you look at their childhood, there was a lot of trauma.
Yeah, they had to escape.
They had to escape. So yeah, speak into that.
Well, I first want to say that I think that everything has goodness and also, I guess I shouldn't say everything, most things that we use
right.
to be safe mm-hmm. have a good beneficial side and also a potentially destructive and painful side.
Yeah.
So I would say most people that are big dreamers also escape to fantasy to when they're feeling pain. Mm-hmm. But if we're like, oh, I never can live in fantasy world or I can never engage in fantasy means I can never dream. Like we don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, yeah, right. but we just have to be aware and talk through and comfort ourselves for why are we going to fantasy. But
yeah,
I think fantasy is just, it's a protector and it's a great yeah. protector.
Yeah.
I think we're all using protectors, disassociation, fantasy. We can use judgment. We can use criticism. We can use perfection. Both of us love mm-hmm. that one. but inside of that, what I found is I can do everything perfect and I can still have pain.
Right.
Like yeah. I had a situation, I've had several situations where I'm like, I think I handled that as good as I could have. My heart intention was so pure. I really tried my best and it still blew up in my face.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. so actually perfection didn't protect me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And in order to engage in perfection, I also had to disconnect from myself. So then I was left abandoned.
I'm alone and I'm hurting.
And I'm hurting. Yeah. So I found that life is much better as a wholehearted person when you're like, there is like, there's not a lot of things that I'm like, this is definitively right and definitively wrong inside of relationship communication. Like all, like, I think we're all trying to do our best.
Yeah.
And so this is not answering your question in any
way. You're doing great. It's all good. Well, a fantasy can be a lot like abandonment, but like our imagination is such a beautiful playground for creativity as well.
Yes.
So it's like that. I love how you're talking about not being black and white about yeah. it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think getting to engage in fantasy in creativity is so important. We can't leave that out. But then also to be able to narrate through, oh, I think, because we live in fantasy in conflict all the time or conversations yeah. like, yeah. oh, I can't tell you how many people I meet with. And they're like, I know if I go to my mom and say that, she is going to do X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, oh, that's where your fantasy land is trying to protect you mm-hmm. from a potentially painful outcome. And I think, I mean, we're going to probably get to that yeah. later of yeah. dismantling fantasy inside of connection, inside of creativity, because that is the dark side of fantasy is yeah. when
it isolates,
mm-hmm. it creates a narrative or a situation that does not exist.
Right. Yeah.
It has not happened.
Yeah.
But my body feels like it has. Yeah. And then yeah. I'm living in this state of stress.
And so now yeah. I'm acting towards another person like they are going to respond to me in a certain way. And we yeah. have no idea whether that's going to happen or not.
Totally. I love, Kelsey, would you share about how perfectionism has showed up for you? Because I think that, I mean, like just like, being even whole,
he's yeah. like, how has it not?
Yeah. I mean, even in like learning how to be wholehearted, we can be like, well, I'm going to be wholehearted perfectly.
Wholehearted person on the planet.
Or I'm going to be so good at regulating myself. Oh, I'm going to be perfect at regulating myself or whatever. So tell me, my dear.
Oh, duh. Well, let's see. So I think how perfection has shown up and then how I have kind of wrestled with it or my relationship with it would start with a childhood where being perfect resulted in relative safety. So mm-hmm. it's a protector that worked for me when I was a little person and worked within my little kid brain context of working. You know, someone from the outside probably would be like, oh, poor thing, she needs to like get a hug. Yeah. But in my experience of life, I was like, yes, okay, being perfect means I get this result. And so as someone whose safety is a really high priority, like feeling safe is probably one of my biggest drivers. There's the kind of cause and effectness of perfection, again, quote unquote perfection, made it really appealing. And so I think when it comes to my like starting to reconnect with my heart, because there was a lot that wasn't super safe in there. There's a lot of anger. There was a lot of pain. Perfection at first was a guide. And I was like, okay, this is the tools my counselor told me of how to regulate. I'm going to do these tools and I'm going to do them really well. I'm going to journal every day. I'm going to be
the best at emotional health.
I am it. Checkmate.
Yeah. And you are very good at it. I do have to
unfortunately,
say.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
You're really good at being human.
And that, I think, was the key that kept me from becoming a little like perfect robot was like the moments Mariah mentioned where my best efforts didn't work. And my impulse was to run back and judge myself of, I did something wrong. Thankfully, I had this new tool of, oh, I was doing the best I knew how. And I, in that moment, and there's nothing I could have done better or worse. Rather, I showed up. And that one, like, probably it's self-compassion, but I think self-compassion can get a rap of being like, oh, love you, sweet, which I do that a lot, actually. I'm very kind to myself. But
what you're saying is the bad rap that self-compassion gets is, oh, I did my best. That's okay. And then, sorry, all that happened. Well, I did my best. But that's actually not how I've ever experienced you, which I think is like the maturity of I did my best. And also I can own how my best fell short and affected you.
Right.
And that's what you get with shame resilience and with having
inner safety
mm-hmm. that you have been working so much. Like, I've been on the receiving end of that where I'm like watching Kelsey have self-compassion and also take ownership for the ways that, mm-hmm. you know,
I affected you.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, well, that's easy.
Stunning. It's so beautiful. Yeah.
And it becomes because I think the biggest piece that's been helpful is disconnecting my safety from others. I grew up in a very codependent kind of context where if you're not okay, I'm not okay. And so I will use control and perfection to make you be okay. Mm-hmm. And taking back the ownership of I'm going to be okay and I'm going to extend love to myself. Of course, I don't do it well all the time, but in general, if I can see myself in through that light, then I can approach a conflict and understand that I'm going to stay connected to myself no matter what. So the stakes suddenly become way lower. And I can have conversations that I wouldn't be able to have otherwise.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, it's not that you try to do that all the time perfectly. You just have a good marker of where you want to eventually land.
I know what it feels like when I'm internally safe.
Yes.
And I can like find my way there. Yeah. Nice. A lot of people don't have that. I didn't have that for such a long time. So I have a big, like, it's very precious to me.
Yeah.
I know what it feels like when I'm safe.
Thank you for articulating that because we're going to get into talking about triggers. And I want to talk about the fact that you guys have an amazing theater company that you've started. But I think a big thing in life is we're looking for something external to create safety internal, but we need to become, as Brené Brown calls, safe harbors for ourselves so we can pull in and just be.
Mm-hmm. Can I say one more thing on that?
Yeah.
I think often when we're in survival or we're just trying to manage, we think there's either the person that's like, oh, I have to control everything. How you found yourself, the way that you managed, coped, was I have to control the people outside of me. Mm-hmm. I have to make sure everything is around me is safe. Mm-hmm. Or we have the people that like pull away and they're kind of like, I don't care what people think about me.
Right.
I don't care. Like, I'm
great
fine.
Point.
I don't need anything.
I'm resilient, quote unquote.
Yeah. It's like the bad bitch mentality thing. And that's like, well, yeah, it actually can keep you safe. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can be safe from people hurting you. And yeah, control does work sometimes. Like sometimes you can control and you are so not connected to the very thing that your heart is crying for, which is just to feel safe and connected.
Seen, heard, known, connected.
Yes.
Yes.
And you can only have connection when you find the middle, which is I have to find some safety inside of myself and connect to that. And also, I have to have connection outside of me and I have to let people in and see. And that's like the middle ground instead of going to avoiding or pushing in and I'm so scared. There's this middle place of I can both let people affect me and I can be moved by them.
Yeah.
And I also am not shaken,
shooketh
from big emotions outside of me because they I can't control them.
Right.
And letting go of that control, I think is actually where you find safety.
And all of this, like all of this has benefited our friendship, our relationships. Mm-hmm. But very, like, so clearly I can see it benefiting our artistic journey.
Yeah,
I love
because that balance of external and internal, of that, like, middle ground of I'm affected and I receive, and yet I'm also stabilizing and internal, allows me to take creative risks and collaborate in spaces where, like, it could be risky, but because I have this balance in, like, emotionally, creativity can happen.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good because so many people, I mean, artists can get a bad rap for, oh, that person's really hard to work with or that person's really difficult. And they, it's almost like dead end. They're just difficult. The end, like, or artists are just emotional and it's chaos. And I think of like probably how many projects have died or not reached their full potential because we either want to be lone rangers or we want to
make everybody happy.
Yeah, make everyone happy or just blow it up and not actually get to the bottom of things. So I remember, Mariah, when you're in your senior year at BCA, we had a meeting and I was like, walked away from it going like, she's going to do great things. Like, and it was a moment because a lot of people, I mean, we've been talking around being that we started BCA. It was always like, we want to see a theater company start. And a lot of people talk about, oh yeah, maybe I'll start a theater company. But I remember finishing the meeting with you going like, she will actually do this. Like, and I think as artists, like there is this kind of powerlessness of waiting for a job or waiting to be picked or be like, you're special. I pick you. And there's an entitlement that can come of like, I've done 3 years of training, now pick me.
Yeah.
Whereas both of you have been like, we want to do this. Let's just make it happen.
Yeah.
And so tell us a bit about the production company Mischief.
Yeah.
And yeah, like where that started.
Well, I do think part of it comes out of my stubbornness. Like I am not waiting around for the phone to ring. I don't, there's nothing inside of me that wants to, hi, my name's Mariah Hardy and I really want to be represented. Here's my stuff. Here's my, like I just am like, if you want to represent me, represent me. Like, I'm out getting my own work. I've had no need to find that. I don't like, I don't want to hustle for anything. Like, I want to make the stuff that I want to do. And if somebody sees me and is like, we'd love to have her, then that sounds wonderful. Mm-hmm. But, and I know that like, that's a part of being an actor is that hustle thing. But I just was like, I have so many creative people around me and I have a job that is stable. Like I'm not needing to make money from this. And so I could just make art with my friends and that would feel really fulfilling and fun. And so that has always felt like a important thing to me. And then befriending Kelsey.
And you guys live together.
We do.
We do.
And we have.
Yeah. You live together. Then you had a little break and then you're back living together.
A little break of 2 months where we wrote a play.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that helps. So you deeply know each other.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I
got... They were in different years of school, by the way.
Yeah.
Yes.
A year apart.
But we bonded over... Actually, I really loved Kelsey's embrace of humanity. And I think one of the first times that I really liked you was when... I don't know why, but
this
you were having a really hard time during rehearsal for Crucible.
Yes,
and we went outside and you were crying. Mm-hmm. And then I held you and we talked through some things. And then the next day, I think you were feeling shame about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you came to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you just pushed into a place where you were afraid of being rejected. And then you came and you were like, I'm so scared that you're going to think that I'm like weak and I'm a mess and that you aren't going to want me or you aren't going to want to be my friend. And she just like was crying, like just cuddled up, like was so soft. And I was like, this is my favorite. This makes me want you so much more. This makes me trust you because you're not like, I know you want to run, but you're not running. You're pushing in. And we had so many moments like that as our friendship built where I was like, I can trust this woman. But one thing that I know about Kelsey that really attracted me to partner with her is we both have a desire to empower other people and to empower other artists. It does not feel fun to either of us to go it alone. That's what I think. Yeah. That's what I think the actor journey that I'm kind of, I was saying, does not sound interesting to me is hustling for myself. Like, I don't have any interest in going at it alone. I don't want to go and just try and get jobs where I work with people all the time that I don't know and that I don't have that is just doing this. I've worked on enough sets where I'm like, it sometimes does feel like a job for some people. And that, like, you are doing something so sacred. The closest thing, besides, I think, giving birth that you can do, which is create, like ushering life into the world through
something
creativity,
new. Mm-hmm.
Is the closest thing to God, I feel like. And so, we birthed the theater company out of a production that we co-wrote called Emmanuel, and with the desire to do something collaborative, something beautiful, and something that felt like it, we were willing to push some buttons, I think, which is, or push back on the way we've watched things be done or been a part of things being done that we didn't feel like aligned with who we were.
And I think that, to your point you're making earlier about the industry, like big capital I industry, I think when I realized that I could create a culture and an environment that facilitated my creativity. And because of the journey I've been on, I know the atmosphere that I need to feel safe, which means I can feel the most creatively, like, fulfilled and inspired and free to, like, you know, again, collaborate. And the clicking moment of like, bing, I can create this, like this structure. I don't have to look for it externally and then try to fit myself into it, which is a model that I've repeated a lot in my life, versus there are resources, specifically in my friend Mariah, there's a resource here of someone who can build with me and create an atmosphere where, I can be creative. And that is ultimately what I want, more than acting, more than writing, more than directing, more than these external things. What I want is to feel aligned and artistically fulfilled.
Yeah.
And I think that's the piece that that feels like a very, like, deep foundational piece to Mischief Theater Company, is an environment, a culture, a structure that serves artists for that, towards that fulfillment.
Mm. Which is funny because it's kind of the full circle moment to fame.
Right.
Of like the thing that I thought fame could give me, this sort of creation, collaboration, being so known in the creative process,
yes,
actually has fulfilled that thing. Like, I'm like, if no one ever knows me, if no one ever is like, oh, Mariah Hardy, she's an amazing writer, director, actor, whatever. Like, yeah. Like, if I never have that, these moments and journeys and experiences that I've had inside of this already are like, oh, that is hitting the need that that, like, fame said it would fulfill.
Yep.
Yes, that's so beautiful. Where did you come up with the name for Mischief?
Well, I
a 3-hour brainstorm session of, we want to have a theater company and we need to have a name.
We need to make a website now. So we have to have a name. Which
it suits you both so well.
Yeah.
Because you're both Mischief in different ways, mischievous in different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So I love it.
Yeah. I think we wanted something that felt like curiosity and a little bit of, like, we're not afraid to be bad, or your version of what you like,
right?
Like whatever you think that like crossing the line, we'll cross the line a little bit. Yeah. We'll push back.
Yeah,
yeah.
While
still being playful, and that's where I mean, I think I love BCA, and it's a Christian conservatory, so they have to have lines. But I'm in it, and I love to push the line. So I was like, I'm always wanting to push back on content. Why can't we do this? Why can't we do this? Well, we can't do it because it is a Christian conservatory that's tied to a church, and like you have to have rules and regulations and content. I totally respect that and get that. Mm-hmm. But as a student experience, which is very tied to who I am, is I want to push back on it.
Yeah.
You give me a rule and I want to push it.
And that's very much in the nature of artists.
Right.
To
find to innovate. The edges. Yes.
Yeah.
High five. High five. High five them. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was kind of what we wanted to capture.
Oh, I love it.
That feeling of that is, and I think in our culture, I hate when people push back on things for the sake of pushing. Like, yeah. And I kind of just said that I do that. So,
yeah.
but I think that I see that culturally of like we are pushing back on things just because we want to be different and we want to be the one that doesn't do the status quo. And I don't love that part of it. Mm. Like, so there is a thing inside of me that I'm like, I'll just push back on rules. But as we've kind of grounded ourselves in what feels authentic to us, we've been like, okay, if we're going to push back on something, number one, it's costly to push back.
Mm-hmm.
And what feels aligned with things that we're willing to push on, which
the worth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which inside of this, our first production, we felt like we wanted to push on this like whitewashed,
sanitized
version of the nativity story. And mm-hmm. we were thinking through like, this is the messiest story in all of human history.
All of these humans bumping into each other with their humanity and their questions and their
yeah. mess. And no one's ever talked through. Did Mary and Joseph have some fights, or did they like?
Right.
Did Mary have a meltdown? Because I know that anyone who's had a baby for the first time has meltdowns. Like, I have to push this baby out, and what am I going to be a good mom? And I don't really know. And like. And then we only have Mary's, like, I am so blessed and highly favored. And I'm sure that is a part of it.
I pondered it with the Lord.
Yeah. Totally a part of it. She definitely did.
That did happen.
But then there was, the messy part. Like, so we wanted everybody to be able to find themselves in the story.
Yeah, that's so. And I saw the show, and it was done at a local church, which is such a beautiful church in the round. And I always tell people it was a great mix of holy and hilarious.
Ooh.
Like it just felt like, there's so much beauty in telling the way that you told the story was so beautiful and clever and made me think. Yeah, because I think that a lot of Bible stories can get a little like, oh, we know this story, and it doesn't actually make you think, and you definitely accomplish that. So it's very cool. I want to talk about you guys have sort of mentioned beautifully around regulation and creating safety, but I'd love for the audience to hear maybe a story of in collaboration, some triggers that came up.
Sure.
Yeah.
Never trigger.
Never.
I am perfect.
Because you are perfect.
I am perfect. It's always Mariah.
No, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So. I'm fine with that.
It's not true. We have some stories.
We have several stories, but
because we were so brave, we did a brave thing.
Yes,
we did the next brave thing.
You did the next brave thing. Thanks, guys.
Which meant it was really messy. Oh,
we did the next brave thing.
We do have a lot of next.
Well, I'll go just for the sake of time. I'll go through. Let's talk about an example of a trigger and how you worked through it, and then we'll go to what's your next brave thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But go ahead.
Why don't you start?
I'll jump in. So we have never done a production before. So we have been in productions, but we have never produced, directed, written, acted, all the layers of what we did. And something we discovered was there are phases of this experience. There's the initial creative inspiration phase, which both of us navigated really smoothly. It felt so peaceful and safe. I think because of that internal safety we both have, we were able to just collaborate. Be so exciting. It was thrilling. Like the energy of that era was like,
like the actual writing.
The actual writing, like, the creating together. Yeah.
Yeah. Because maybe share quickly what your roles were in the creative process. Yeah. As well.
We wrote it pretty equally. Each of us took, we built a structure. Each of us took scenes. So very much co-wrote. And then as we moved forward, Mariah directed and I acted. And then music directed, so helped all the music come into place. And then we had amazing Sharon, who also brought amazing music. And then as we got closer and closer, producers.
Dun, 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 the paint slot.
Producers. I've been a producer for one thing before. And I had standards of what that would look like. And then I didn't meet those standards. Dun, dun, dun.
Well, I think too, again, we'd never done it before. So,
yeah,
like Kelsey's trying to manage the music, and then also she's the leading role. And then also, like, we're making last minute writing changes. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't get into the space where we were actually performing until like a 2 weeks before. And so there was tons of things that had to be done. But if you've ever acted in a show before, at that point, you have to just focus on your performance. And so then everything fell on me. Mm. And I was unprepared for that. And
phase three.
Yeah.
The show is coming.
Yeah.
It approaches.
Yeah.
So I'm having so many feelings of being abandoned, feeling like this is all on my shoulders. Nothing's going to get done if I don't do it. And then.
Because just to explain to people, when you're a producer, there's so many, like, you have to take so much initiative and you have to, like, kind of. And think of all the gaps, anticipate, like, okay, we're doing this pipe and drape. Like, we're doing what is, like, there's so many things that go wrong.
Yeah.
And yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it was like the set, me and my brother built it and my husband. And then I got all the props and then most of the costumes. We had somebody who was amazing, Anaya, that made the angel costumes and helped put together some other ones. But like I sourced everything and I went to the store and got everything. And then we needed more drapes for things. So then I had to go buy material and find somebody to make a new drape for something. And like then we had to hang up, we had an enclave where angels were, and then nothing was working where these drapes, they kept falling off. So then I had to troubleshoot that. Meanwhile, I'm supposed to be helping light the show. Then I'm finding where props live. I'm spiking the stage. We had some lighting issues last minute where the way that we had blocked the stage, the, you know, set wasn't lit for what the lighting setup they had. So we had to move everybody around and like all of this is happening in like 3 days. Mm-hmm. And so I'm losing my ever loving mind. And then Kelsey goes on a trip to see her new boyfriend, his family in south of us. And she leaves for the weekend before the show opens. And then comes back, supposed to come back Sunday, decides to come back Monday morning. But then her boyfriend gets terrible food poisoning on the drive back up. And I had already felt like I was so stressed out. We open on Thursday.
Terrible.
I spent the whole weekend just killing myself, getting everything together. And I'm like, at least Monday is coming. Kelsey's going to be here. And then she can't.
Hey, Mariah. So we're stuck. We can't. We're still like 5 hours out. I won't be getting in till right before rehearsal. Silence.
I was like, okay.
I love this because this happens all the time in
life.
Collaboration and life. Yes. This is so great.
Which I think that moment, like, I didn't feel quite as triggered about the fact, like, I felt so much compassion that he had food poisoning. And I was like, this sounds like such a terrible situation. But I had already been feeling like so many things are falling on me. I'm the only, like, I'm communicating with all these people. I'm getting all this stuff figured out. Like, everything is falling on me and I'm so tired and I don't want to do this alone. And I feel abandoned. And what we also learned is inside of that, Kelsey, when she feels stressed, pulls away. And when I feel stressed, I push in. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't actually that I think Kelsey abandoned me as we talked through it. I'm like, oh no, I just went into, I am now the savior of this show, which is a role that I've played in my family, is everything's going to shit. Let me step in. Mm. I will help this. Mm. I'll save this. I'll make everything okay. And there was loads of other options for me. I could have asked for help. I could, like, Kelsey and I could have taken 30 minutes and brainstormed. Okay, this doesn't actually mean you need to step up. It means right. we need to have somebody else
yes.
help. I could have called you. You have tons of experience in theater. Yeah. I'm sure you would have came. Like,
yeah.
there's tons of people that we yeah. could have called right. where we could have been like, hey, we need help. I need these things done. And we would have had people help. But when you are in this survival mode and you only have your one protector available, that's what I acted in. So mm-hmm. I had to take ownership of like, this actually isn't all your fault. Mm-hmm. Not that ever, like, it's not actually that you abandoned me. It's that you were at your max capacity. We didn't know how to get through this experience and you did what you could. And it was up to me to talk to you about how I was feeling and us to come up with a solution.
And allow there to be gaps.
Yeah.
Because me retreating when I feel stressed, I'm seeing Mariah fill all these gaps. I'm feeling so grateful. I'm like, wow, look at her go.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Fantasies going
I
on
have
here.
Nothing to give. And so that's perfect. All is well.
Yeah.
Until.
Yeah.
And then realizing like, oh, both of us were, our polarity resulted in a rupture and in pain.
Yeah.
And I think the phone conversation while I was far away went something along the lines of me being like, I could see how you would feel really abandoned in this moment. If I were in your shoes, this would suck. And I am so sorry. Like, I am internally knowing, like, I'm not bad. I haven't done anything wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to let shame come in like it normally would and be like, oh my gosh, Mariah, I'm the worst person. I'm going to now overcompensate and really like, I'm going to take everything off of your shoulder. And rather than swinging to the extreme, staying in this like weird tension of I'm not bad. And my choices have resulted in you feeling pain in this moment. And I'm sorry. Mm. I'm sad that you're feeling pain.
And her doing that honestly helped so much because I was like, oh, I'm being seen.
Mm.
And I could have taken it and the next step and been like, okay, I do need help. I can't do all of this. But instead I was like, oh, thank you for seeing me. Okay, I can do all of this. And so I had to like clean that up and also reconcile the places inside of my heart where I was like, I did abandon myself in those moments. And sometimes I think that's just part of learning and growing and like, how do you manage stress when you got to get your stuff done? Like, but I felt like, it brought even you just like owning, I bet you feel abandoned. I bet this feels really hard. I was like, yeah, I do feel abandoned. And this does feel really hard. And it allowed me, I didn't feel like I was like, oh, I'm all the way back inside of myself and everything is fixed. But I did feel like I'm able to be connected to this part of me. I'm aware that there's a part of me that I'm abandoning. And I also feel a slight connection to it because I'm being validated by somebody inside of this. And so I mean, there's some other situations that we had, like this wasn't the only one that we had to navigate through. There's several others, but both of us committing inside of relationship to not villainize the other person, to know
that's so good.
That they're doing their best, I'm doing my best. And we have a million things, a million motivators, a million protectors that are coming up in all these different moments, and we might bump into them. But if we can just stay connected to the fact that both of us are like, we can find our humanity together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's really the story that we wanted to tell. And that was kind of beautiful. It was like, okay, if we're trying to tell the human story about Jesus, could we also engage in that as we're doing this process?
Yeah.
And finding that I actually don't need Kelsey to be perfect in order for me to feel safe with her.
Right.
I don't need her to not hurt me in order for me to feel safe with
her. And the flip side of that, I don't need Mariah to think good of me all the time. To be like, Kelsey's perfect for me to be okay. Like, Mariah can actually feel pain and be angry at me, and I still feel connected to her. That was new for me. That was cool.
Yeah. That's so powerful because I think a lot of people would just push all of that down and they would
get it done.
And they would go into the next show, you being the savior, you being, oh, I have to do everything perfect or whatever it was, you know, on your end. And you kind of, I think what's beautiful is you work through your own triggers. We're able to communicate it with each other and probably have more of a reset and a plan for the next one.
Oh, yeah.
And aware of like your needs and what each other can be and can't be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for you guys, what is your next brave thing?
Yeah. Well, we finished the show and the feedback about the show was incredible.
It was amazing.
It was beyond expectation.
Yeah, it was amazing.
It expanded us in ways that I cannot put into words. But we both left that and we were like, we can do anything.
Yeah.
The world is our oyster. And I want that for other people, truly. Like I want... Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to empower other people to have expansive experiences. And we have both.
Yeah, to your point, like what you were just saying, Ella, of like the next, if we would have shoved it down, the next experience would have had like walls up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we didn't, the next experience has walls down.
Yeah. An expansion.
And it feels possible.
Yeah.
But the piece that like anyone could write something, put on a production. Anyone could do the things that we did, but that piece that we feel like is missing is like people don't know how to connect and relate so that walls can stay down.
Yeah, because that was where, yeah, again, like what you said, we are not special in the fact that, I mean, we're special in the fact that we had an idea and did it. Not a lot of people do that.
Right.
But we're not special in the fact that I directed a show. She's not special for acting. No. We're not special for writing anything. Mm-mm. But the thing that set us apart was this, we kind of created an incubator mm-hmm. where people could come together, mm-hmm. fail, mm-hmm. explore, not get it right, mm-hmm. including, oopsies, I punched myself, including us.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
We were like, we actually believe that we can do this with humanity, with messiness, with failure. And that was the overall feeling, I think, from the, and that was the response that we got from the people that were working with us. And so we were like, oh, we have something that's different here and we mm-hmm. want to, we want to do something with that. We both were like, we've had so many people reach out and be like, whatever you're doing, I just want to be involved in it. Like,
yeah.
Tons of people.
Yeah.
Which is so
new.
Cool. It's new.
Yeah.
Like, so that's where I'm like, we have lots of shows that happen here in Reading. Why is the thing that we're doing different? So within that, we wanted to have we wanted to create some sort of platform where we could talk about these things or we could talk through our process. Cause I haven't heard a lot of people who are friends diving into a creative exploration together talk about how they handled conflict or misunderstanding or pain. And also our creative journey was brilliant. Like mm-hmm. the way that we created the show,
the structures we created
was brilliant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like anybody can write a show with how mm-hmm. we did that. And so we are launching a podcast mm-hmm. We're launching some probably online programs here at the beginning of the summer. But so right now, the podcast is going to be launching in March.
Mm-hmm.
We have like a working title, but right now it's just Mischief Theater Company podcast. But we want it to encompass this idea of brave conversations or hard conversations with friends.
Mm-hmm.
Hard conversations and the nitty gritty, the wrestle inside of what it actually takes to be a connected human
creator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so good and so needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so proud of you guys. It's so like exciting to see what will, you know, happen. And it's so exciting that you're starting year one this way.
I know. Yeah. It's crazy. It's
so healthy.
But I think if you look at our stories, both of us kind of have that parallel that I was talking about earlier of there's the artist, the creator, and then there's becoming wholehearted. And I think if we can tap into that with Mischief Theater Company, we're going to be doing more productions. We're going to be writing more content, the creator side. But then we have this heart because of our stories to also be bringing people along with us in that wholehearted net.
Yes.
And that I think is something that makes me so excited and feel so sustainable because my big dream is to be artist, woman, human, mother, like all of these pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very, very excited about the potential for all those things to live together in these this culture that we're creating.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm so proud. I know all our students are so, like, it's so exciting to even be like, when you graduate, go be a part of this. Yeah. It's so exciting.
Come hang out.
Yeah, go. Yeah, very, very proud. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, guys.
Oh, my
thanks for having me.
Yeah, so fun. Thank you.